like to make the news when I trip. Probably be my downfall, a short fuse on the crib. But I'm working on my temper, put some jewels on my wrist. Cause I'd rather be that nigga on the cruise with my bitch. Boat dock, only food is a fish. On the coast of Greece, nigga, where the views is the shit. Follow me home, come and view the abyss. Take a walk with me, take your tool just to take a piss. It ain't safe, tell a nigga get a grip. Hard-headed niggas gotta take a bag to take a shit. Where if you let a nigga mark you out, you labeled as a bitch. Can't take a strike back, so niggas ain't taking shit. Ain't see you with it, probably take a nigga shit. You got that on your record, probably take you for your chick.
What's up, what's up, what's good with it, everybody? We're back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. Now, before we start this podcast off, I gotta say, rest in peace to Nipsey Hussle, man. We lost a true king in losing Nipsey Hussle. And those who have been down with us from the beginning, y'all know that we're no stranger to Nipsey. If you listen to our first episode, he's actually our intro for there. So definitely want to send peace and blessings out to his family. Sam, what up?
Man, what's up, man? But yeah, we coming in with some heavy news. Well, it ain't breaking or nothing, but yeah, it's been a tough little week.
Yeah, it definitely has. But let's try to brighten the people's spirits here with some of this good old sports talk that we got to talk. Now, I know a lot of people they've been waiting for us. They've been where y'all been at? We ain't heard from y'all since Duke lost.
Yeah, this will make a lot of people happy for sure.
I'm sure. So let's just go ahead and recap what we haven't talked about already as far as March Madness is concerned. Believe our last episode came what, before the Elite Eight?
Yeah, we came in right after the first weekend, so before the Sweet 16.
Oh man, it's been that long.
Yeah, we've been gone 2 weeks, bro.
Oh man, I didn't even know it had been that long.
Yeah, we missed the
Sweet 16. Nah. We talked Sweet 16 because remember we talked about the shooting woes and all that.
Nah, we ain't talk after Taco, did we?
Yeah, we talked after Taco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
nah, we talked over second round though, bro.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We ain't. Was it?
Yeah, we played Taco second round, bro.
We so ain't who talk we play since... after that?
Then we played Virginia Tech in the Sweet 16. We ain't talked about that game.
Dang, I remember talking before that.
Yeah, we ain't talk after Virginia Tech. We ain't been back since this week because we ain't had no content. Only thing we had to talk about was college basketball.
True. But let's just we'll pick up from what people remember most. Obviously, our Blue Devils took a hard fought loss to Michigan State, and that game right there, it upset me, but I got over it extremely quickly. Way better than I have previous losses. Most times when we lose in a tournament, I'm like, man, I'm sick. I wasn't really that upset. What did that loss do to you? Did it put you in a funk?
Yeah, I was in a nice little funk for probably at least 36 hours, probably.
Oof.
Because I mean, I guess I wouldn't call it a funk. It just kind of frustrates me that like you could come in as the number one player in a class and be a wing guy and shoot like 60-some% from the free throw line. That's just something I can't really wrap my head around. But it's not like I blame RJ for the loss or nothing. But I mean, you gotta make your free throws.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I wanted to talk about too. Any Duke fan that I saw bashing RJ or anybody, period, that I saw bashing RJ, all year, y'all haven't criticized this man not one bit. Y'all been talking about how nice he was, how he was this, how he was that. Then all of a sudden he missed two free throws and you're like, oh, he's shitty, oh, he this, oh, he that. Like, yeah, you got to make your free throws, but let's not act like this guy's not the reason why we were. Obviously, Zion played most of the role, but –
who also can't make free throws.
Exactly my point. So I think the reason why it didn't upset me is because that's been our downfall all year, man. I don't know why, but I knew that deep down those free throws was going to come back to hurt us because we had been in a lot of situations where missed free throws could have cost us the game, but we just haven't been. We hadn't been in anything close enough to where – it hurt us. Outside of that whatchamacallit game, matter of fact, the UCF game. We almost lost the game on free throw, missed free throws there.
But on Zion.
Right.
So I wonder if those same people would have been saying Zion was a bum if we would have lost that game due to a missed free throw by him.
That's a huge question. That's a question that I would love to ask everybody that was bashing RJ. But nevertheless, I want to give credit to Michigan State because they did a great job of staying within that game. They got out early on us, and then once we walked them down, they didn't get intimidated. They played their game.
You know why?
Why?
Veteran guard.
That's exactly what I was going to say. They got that leadership in Cassius Winston. He's been there.
Trey Jones, but he just couldn't do nothing with Winston. He was just too heady for him.
Yeah, I feel like Trey Jones did a great job, but I feel like Izzo did an even better job of isolating Cassius against other players. They did a great job of basically what most other teams have done throughout the year: pick and roll, get Trey Jones off of your dominant scorer and let him do what he does. Granted, there were a lot of possessions where Trey Jones was guarding him, and he still made tough buckets. So that just goes to show how much of a baller Cassius Winston is. But I definitely want to tilt my hat to Izzo because, I mean, this is something he's been trying to do for a long time. What is he, 1-11 or now 2-11?
2-11 against
Coach K. So this was a long time coming for him. He definitely, desperately needed this. And for it to happen in the tournament, I'm sure it meant the world to him. It just didn't mean much more after that, though.
I said that, too. I was talking to somebody at Sauce's house about the game, and I was like, yeah, I was like, man, Michigan State Coach K 11-1 against Izzo. Then I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
I think he might be due for one.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. I thought about that and I said it. But I really didn't believe it. But that being a point guard and now me finally like being able to take my emotions out of a Duke game, I gotta say that Cassius Winston, that's a one hell of a point guard, at least on the college level. He controlled the game. If he wasn't scoring, he was setting somebody up, or he was making sure that he made sure they got buckets on key possessions, or at least made sure the ball got to who it needed to get to in that possession. Like, he did everything they needed to win that game.
Now that I'm thinking about it, the last time that Michigan State even came close to beating a Duke team was when they had that stellar guard play. Well, that was back when they had Keith Appling, wasn't it?
Keith Appling and Gary Harris.
Yeah.
They beat us. That was the last time they beat
exactly.
us.
Exactly. See, that speaks volumes right there, because that's what Izzo has been missing over these years. For being honest, Izzo has his most success when he has point guards like a Cassius Winston or a Keith Appling or who was right before Keith Appling? It was somebody else. I can't remember, but he has his most success when he has a point guard that can carry the load and not just like a here today, gone next year type of guy. A guy that's able to build over the years and
he grows the relationship.
Yes. That's a testament to him. A lot of people were giving him flack for him being the type of coach that he was as far as yelling in a freshman's face and all of this stuff. I guarantee 4 years from now, if that freshman stays at Michigan State, we'll be seeing him. We'll be seeing him. We'll be knowing who he is, knowing his name by his senior year because of what Izzo expects out of his guys. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing the way that he did, like yelling in players' faces and all that stuff. Because I actually –
absolutely not.
Exactly. And I did a little more research on it, and come to find out, a lot of parents send their kids to Izzo for that reason, because they know that they need that leadership and they need somebody to make them into a man. And that's what Izzo has done with his former players based off of what other parents and former players have said. When have you ever heard – a former Michigan State player come out and say, I ain't really like him like that. He was this, he was that. I haven't heard any bad comments as far as Izzo is concerned.
Yeah, and why would you want a coach that's not going to hold you accountable on the biggest stage?
Exactly, Exactly.
I don't want to play for no coach that ain't going to hold me accountable for my mistakes.
That's a fact. But let's talk about some other games. Prior to or after Duke lost, we got to see what was it, Michigan State and who did they play? Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Michigan State, Texas Tech. I didn't even get to watch that game, I don't believe. I didn't watch that game. Did you catch any of that?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it.
What was your takeaway from it? Why do you think Michigan State lost that game?
I feel like they played it pretty well. Culver, he just hit some big shots down the stretch of that game for real.
Yeah, that's one thing that people don't give Texas Tech enough credit for, I didn't feel like, throughout the year. Texas Tech was a good ball club all year. Up until when they played Duke, they was undefeated. Like they, and when we played them, they gave us a good game. Like it wasn't like we ran through Texas Tech. That Texas Tech was a good ball club, top to bottom. And just to throw on top that they had Culver, which is one of the best players in the nation, that's what I feel like took them over the top, and that's what led them to the championship.
I can say, though, that Michigan State did get a little bit complacent. They was up about, like, 10, 12, maybe about, like, 8 or 9 minutes to go, and they kind of got complacent a little bit. And then Texas Tech went on a little run, and then down the stretch when it was close, Culver just hit some big shots.
And that's another situation or another scenario of a team having their demise come back to bite them, because that's been Michigan State for a lot of the year. They've had games where even the Duke game, you look back to the Duke game, they had a comfortable lead throughout majority of the game, and we walked them down. They just so happened to pull it out in the end. So you run into a team like Texas Tech, where you try to do the same thing, you get that big lead and you get complacent and you get walked down and you just didn't have enough to pull it out in the end. So, like I said, that's another situation of your demise coming back to get you, your downfall being your demise. So, shout out to Texas Tech for making it to the championship. I had them going pretty far. I didn't have them going to the championship in any of my brackets. So, that was pretty dope.
We must talk about
You know what was coming next. You know what was coming next. Auburn UVA.
No, not even just that. I want to talk about their run.
Yeah, let's touch on that a little bit.
You called it, for one.
Yeah.
You said Auburn was poised for a run. I had them in upset alert first round, which actually damn near happened. They should have lost.
Yeah, that's true. But,
man, look at the teams they knocked off on their road to the Final Four, though, man. I mean, they beat Carolina, UK.
They arguably had the toughest road to get to the Final Four. It was a pretty tough ride.
Kansas.
Yeah, they beat Kansas UK, as well.
UNC on your way to the Final Four, man. That's tough.
Yeah, that's I mean, I felt like their whole I was really high on Auburn because of the way that they played us earlier this year. I didn't necessarily think that they would go all the way to the Final Four, but yeah, I want to give a huge shout out to them as well, because Bruce Pearl got them boys down there balling.
That's the team, bro. I swear, I told Hale, I was like, bro, this is what we should have looked like my senior year in high school, bro. That's what we should have been like. We just guards this anybody, just like knock your head off. Like, you got to guard everybody. Them boys is fast. They just running and scoring. Like, it's just fun to watch. They was a fun team to watch. And I hadn't watched them, but I watched them against us, and I watched them against
probably UK.
Yeah, I think it was Kentucky. It was either Kentucky or Tennessee. Like, I watched them twice throughout the regular season. Like, I feel cheated a little bit that I didn't watch them play more this year.
Yeah, I enjoyed them every time that I watched them. Granted, I didn't watch them that often, but I did watch them. I watched them, I want to say, probably about 4 or 5 times throughout the year. It started with the Duke game. Once we played them earlier this year, I just liked what I saw. It was an interesting team, and I wanted to see if they were as good as they played against us, because they were really good against us. They had me nervous that whole game.
Right. If they ain't lose, oh boy, to that torn ACL, we might be sitting here talking about a different
national. Hey, I mean, if we want to keep it a buck, there was a couple calls away from being in the national championship. Let's touch on that, man. They lost to UVA by 1 point. There were a couple of calls that people considered to be, you know, controversial. So, what was your take? Do you think that those calls were bad calls or calls that shouldn't have been made?
The double dribble should have been called, but I see why it wasn't. The ball didn't really bounce very far away from dude. So the ref really, it happened so quick, the ref probably didn't even realize what had happened. It just looked like a dribble to him. But, I mean, the 3 point, that was a foul. I mean, you can't debate that. That was a foul. And if you want to talk about the double dribble and it not being called, I mean, I mean, you know how I am about the calls. I mean, it's a part of the game. That's how I've been brought up. That's how it is. I mean, it's going to be good calls. It's going to be bad calls. It happens sometimes. But, I mean, if you want to talk about the double dribble, I can debate with you on that. But if you want to sit here and tell me that that wasn't a foul in the corner, you've never played basketball before.
Yeah.
Or if you did play basketball, you're not a shooter.
Right, right. The double dribble, I felt like it should have been called. But the more I looked at it, Ty Jerome actually got fouled prior to that double dribble happening, and they didn't call the foul either. So I felt like that was kind of a sticky situation. Like, that whole sequence was pretty sticky. So I'm not too – I think that it should have been called, but I don't think that that decided the game. That three-point foul at the end of the game decided it. Like, anybody knows you do not get that – you give the shooter enough space to come down for one. For two – you know people are looking to draw fouls in this situation. Whether they kick their legs out, no matter what they do, it is your job to make sure that you do not foul them and contest the shot the best you can. I don't care if you run by the guy. You run on the side of him and contest it. But there is no way that a guy that shoots as good as Cal guy, that you give him an opportunity to go to the free throw line to shoot free throws. Like, that's the last possible thing you wanted. I'm taking my chances with him slapping a three as opposed to him going to the line, being able to compose his thoughts and make sink three free throws.
You know what, though?
What?
The more I think about it, bro, I could think of, like, three times that shit happened at the end of games in the tournament. Like, our coach is not teaching closeout drills no more. We're not doing closeout drills in practice no more.
That's a good question. Me and my dad were talking about this, and I was telling him, basketball seemed like it's taking a turn these days. Like, it's a lot of stuff that's changed over the years that players don't seem to pride themselves in doing. Closeout drills, obviously one. But one thing that we've also touched on is free throws. Like, I don't understand how you can be lottery picks in the drafts, best players in the nation coming out of high school, and can't make free throws. Like, that don't make sense to me at all. And that it's more common now than ever, I feel like. And it's not just with big guys or wings. There are point guards that are not good free throw shooters. And anybody that knows basketball, that's one of the – like, that's an automatic check mark as a point guard. You have to be able to end the game at free throws. As long as I've played basketball, I can say from the bottom of my heart that I've always prided myself in being a good free throw shooter. I don't care what happens. Coach is going to be able to check me into that game if I'm not already in there and say, throw the ball to him. Make them foul Ishmael. I have always been a guy that prided myself in shooting good free throws. As a point guard, I just feel like that's something that comes with the territory. You have to be able to shoot free throws. So I do not understand what's going on in the world these days with guys that are as talented as these young men are that can't make free throws. Like, that just – oh, just, I don't understand it at all.
It's wild. And like you said, it's just like the nuances are gone. It's just, can you score? Can you rebound? can you set me some screens and catch some lobs? That's all you really got to do. Especially if you like 6'7", 6'8", bro. If you could do one of them four things, you're on the floor.
Fact. That's a fact. And I just, man, I don't know. Like you said, coaches are looking in different directions these days. But let's talk national championship. What was your take from yesterday's game? I'll actually start this one. I wasn't too excited about watching it. This is one of the first national championships that I wasn't eager to watch. Mostly, partly because I didn't think the game was going to be exciting. Both teams are pretty good defensively, or really good defensively, should I say. And I just didn't – I thought that we were going to get a recap of, like, the Super Bowl, like a whole bunch of defensive possessions that just weren't exciting. But I was incorrect in that. UVA, to me, they pretty much controlled that whole game. And Texas Tech walked them down at the end. The thing that stood out the most to me, I'll just go out and say it. I believe Texas Tech got outcoached down the stretch. That final possession that they had, I want to believe they had a second or so on the clock, and they burned a timeout, and the coach appeared to be drawing up a play. But once it came time to execute it, I don't know if the players didn't execute it correctly, if they were confused, or if the coach just flat out didn't design a play. But that last shot that they got at regulation was god awful. That was the worst regulation ending shot that I have seen probably all tournament, as far as being able to design a play and go out there and execute it. That was horrible. Like, I was literally sitting here, me and my wife was watching the game. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I didn't understand. To me, it looked like he didn't draw up anything, because the rest of the players were all in certain spots, but it looked like he was just like, shit, we're just going to check our chances, getting the ball to the corner and putting up a quick three. Like, no, draw up something. Like, for instance, the Duke Virginia Tech game, that play that he drew up, oh my goodness.
Oh man, yeah.
It was beautiful. It's not hard to draw up a play that quickly. Like, you were in a favorable spot taking a ball out, you're under the basket, so it's not like you have to draw up something crazy to get a three ball, like you got to launch a three. Like, no, you could have drawn up something similar to where you get a lob toward the basket, or make it easier for your players, or something that's going to draw a foul or something. Nobody is shooting a contested three ball with two hands in your face. It didn't even make it to the rim because it got blocked. That's how bad of a shot it was. So that, to me, is what won the game for UVA. Once I saw that play, I'm like, oh, it's over. They're not beating UVA in overtime. It's not happening. UVA has too many guys that are capable of taking this to the next level. Not to mention DJ Hunter had a career high. Or was it DeAndre Hunter had a career high? So
see, that's what I think lost them the game, is when they gave up that three to him in the corner.
Yeah.
To tie it up. How does he get that wide open? Off a little rub. It wasn't even really a screen. Boo just kind of bumped him a little bit, got the switch, and he's wide open. Wide open.
Yeah, man, that was ridiculous. Can't.
And it was Culver. You can't.
Yeah. You can't. And there were a couple of instances in that game where they gave up crucial three balls, where they were on a run, and it's crucial possessions, like down the stretch, last minute or so. They gave up a big-time three to Cal Guy, too. He was wide open. Like, they literally, I believe UVA got an offensive rebound and kicked it out. Kicked it out to the top of the key. They rushed to the top of the key and left Cal Guy. And he kicked it straight to Cal Guy, and he slapped a three. Like, I'm taking my chances with guys other outside of Cal Guy and DeAndre Hunter beating me tonight. I'm sorry. Like, these two guys will not get an opportunity to beat me. If somebody else does it, cool. Shows that you got the depth and your team is actually built like that. But on a night like the national championship two nights ago, I'm sorry. I can't. I can't understand, like you said, how he got that wide open, along with Cal guy in his situation like that. That's just crazy to me.
Yeah, as good of a defensive team as Texas Tech is,
they had some crucial defense. They had some lapses.
Cost them a championship because Virginia was kind of dead after they went down three. They kind of was like, damn, are we about to, like,
choke again?
They hit that three that very next possession after going down three, and it was huge for their confidence. They like, oh, no, they can't play with us. We good.
Exactly.
They got to stop right there on that possession. It would have been under 30 seconds, and they would have been going to the free throw line up three. Virginia is going to be thinking a whole totally different – they're going to have a whole total different mindset.
Exactly.
But you give up a three to the hottest player on the floor.
I want to say I can't remember if it was overtime or toward the end of regulation. I want to say that the end of regulation because Texas Tech had the momentum and clock was ticking, clock was running. So if they would have got a good look at the basket or try to attack the basket to draw a foul or something, then they would have actually, you know, built on that momentum. One of those possessions, they came down and took a terrible three. Terrible. Like, I believe the ball didn't even hit rim or something. Like, it bounced off the glass.
Yeah, it was your boy, Moretti.
Yeah, that's exactly who it was. Yeah. It was just, that was another case of them not, I guess, being used to being in that position, should I say. Because a team, you take a team like Virginia. I mean, let's be honest. Virginia's a team who they've been good for the last, 2 years? Like, two to three years, they've been in the conversation to be a really good ball club. And this year, you put them in the same position as Texas Tech in a moment like that, having a lead, having a momentum, I guarantee they're not taking those shots like that. They're not going to come down and take an ill-advised three. They're definitely going to take their time and try to get a clean look. So, credit to Texas Tech for getting there and making it exciting. But it was apparent that UVA was the better team on the court.
I don't know though, because Culver ain't played all. Culver had a tough Final Four, man.
Yeah,
he was 5 for 22 last night. He could have 0 for 6 from three. He could have. I mean, that could have changed some things if he could have played a little better, I guess.
That's true. He did hit some clutch buckets down the stretch, though.
Yeah, that's what he did against Michigan State, too. He didn't do shit, but down the stretch, he hit some big shots.
Yeah. That's I want to give him a shout-out, too, because that's a testament to being a good player. Struggling all night and still finding a way to keep your team in it down the stretch. That's definitely
That's mental
toughness. Yeah, that's mental toughness at its finest. So, big shout out to him. I think he'll be good at the next level too.
Yeah.
But like you said, that completely changes things. If he has a good ball game, we might be looking at Texas Tech running away with that one. Because they got some key minutes out of a lot of guys. So if you get your guy, your main guy to go out there and do what he's supposed to do, then like I said, they might come out on top. But before we get off college basketball, great news. It lit me up when I saw the notification. I'm like, yes. Trey Jones returning for his sophomore year. A lot of people were expecting him to go to the draft this year. I saw a lot of people saying he should have went. What's your take? Do you think Trey Jones made the right decision to come back? And what do you think that means for Duke?
I'm not gonna sit here and get into if I think it was right or wrong because I would have understood his decision either way. I wouldn't have been surprised at all if he went to the NBA because I feel like whatever you could learn in college, you could learn in the NBA getting paid to learn it. So, I mean, that's how I feel. But as far as what that means for us as a team, I think that's huge. We can have a little bit of experience coming back and, I mean, he's got a lot of potential. There's no telling what he could come back and be next year, really.
Man, I'm gonna be that guy and say that this thing is colossal. This the one question mark that Duke seems to always have right after a big draft class or a big recruiting class is that point guard slot. We always seem to recruit a good point guard and he leaves, and then we're in a position where we're like, we don't got no point guard. So next year, not only will we have him coming back, but I don't know if a lot of people don't realize that we've got a lot of players. We only had two seniors on this roster, period. And the two seniors were guys that didn't really play at all. Obviously, we're losing RJ, Zion, and Cam. So that's going to hurt. But then, along with that, we got guys coming in like Wendell Moore and Boogie Ellis and Vernon
Carey.
Yeah, everybody know about Vernon. But we got a wing that's supposed to be coming to us, too. What is his name? I can't remember his name, but he hasn't decided yet. But he actually commented on Trey Jones' post, too, once he said that he was coming back. So I think that it's huge for Duke because, like you said, Goldwire is coming back next year. Javon Delarier is coming back next year. Marquise Bolden is coming back next year. Alex O'Connell is coming back next year. Hopefully we can get some good play out of Joey Baker next year. So I think that we've got we have the roster that will give us an opportunity to compete next year. But having Trey Jones come back to anchor that is huge. Like that's really big because you just can't put a price on point guard leadership. And what he meant to this team this year, he's going to mean so much more to that team next year because he's going to be the only guy coming back outside of Javon Delorier that played extremely meaningful minutes. That's the only other starter. Him and Javon Delorier will be the only two starters coming back next year. So I think it's huge. Matthew Hurt, that's the dude's name. Matthew Hurt, he's a power forward. White dude, he reminds me a lot of Dirk. I think he'll be a three or four-year guy. But I think he'll play next year as well if he does come.
This roster got a lot of potential on it, man. But the returning guys got to learn how to put the ball in the hole. They can't come back. They got to come back better.
I need Alex O'Connell to take a Luke Kennard step.
That's literally the exact words I was about to use. Luke Kennard step. That's literally exactly what I was about to say.
That shit is crazy. I need it. That's what I need, man. It's just I feel like Alex O'Connell has so much potential. But he's just not tapping into it. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or if it's just that I don't know. I don't know what it is because we were saying all year.
RJ and them must have been busting his ass. He was like, man, I don't belong.
Right. Maybe I ain't as nice as I thought I was. Maybe I'm not really cut from that cloth. But, yeah, because we talked about it all year. We said a lot of times, I think it's just lack of playing time. He don't really get too many minutes. And then his shine time finally opened up. And we talked about it on the podcast. You said, yeah, that just showed us that he wasn't ready.
Yeah, he's not.
So
he just ain't ready. That's why I said I'm a quick questioning the GOAT.
Yeah.
He know what the hell he doing.
Exactly. I'm going to need him to take a step next year. But if we being honest, I wouldn't be surprised to see Joey Baker take more of a Luke Kennard step than him. Because like I said, when Joey Baker got his opportunity, he was ready. Like, he looked like, nigga, give me some minutes. Like,
he took that red shirt to heart.
Right.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right. So, yeah, I'm expecting to see that. But, you know, we do this every week. Let's get off Duke because I don't want to hear it. Let's talk NBA now. The Eastern Conference playoff picture. It's not really as clear as the West. I mean, it is for the most part, but as far as the eighth seed, there's a three-way tie with the Hornets, Pistons, and the Heat. Right now, the Hornets hold the tiebreaker over both the Pistons and the Heat, but the Pistons have an easier road to that eighth seed if they can win their last two. Who do you think would be, I guess, the best team to make it into that eighth spot? Who do you believe would be would make that first round game most competitive?
Most competitive, I'd probably say the Pistons, because they got some girth down low. You know what I'm saying? With Drummond and Blake, they can kind of clock it up a little bit for the Greek Freak. But I want to see D-Wade go to the playoffs one more time.
Yeah, because I believe if we see D-Wade in the playoffs, we will see playoff Wade. D-Wade has a lot of moments to where he shows that he still got something left in the tank. It might not,
he just be saving
right, it for the right moment. Exactly. It might not be consistently, like, over the year. But he has those moments where he like, nah, I can still get in my bag. Like, it's still – ain't nothing changed. I'm one of them crafty vets that I might not have a step that I used to have, but I got the mental that can get me to where I need to get a bucket. And, I like I said, I wouldn't be – like you said, I wouldn't be against seeing D-Wade in that playoff spot. I hope that they get it. I think that – I don't think that they will – but I hope they get it. As far as who I think would be the best matchup, I don't think you can really go anywhere outside of the Pistons because of what you said. Like, those other two ball clubs, as far as the Hornets and the Heat are concerned, Giannis is going to do what he wants when he wants against those two ball clubs.
He probably will against the Pistons too, in all honesty.
Yeah, but it'll be tougher. Yeah, it'll be tougher. I will say that mostly because, like you said, they can clog the paint a little bit. And they've got some guys done. They got athletic guys like Blake, and they got Drummond, who is probably not going to come out of that paint unless they can find a way to stretch him. They who is it? Brook Lopez, their center? Is that who their center is?
Man, I think that would be the brothers against each other.
Yeah, I think so. So
yeah, you play for the Pistons.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good matchup with the Pistons, but I still got the Bucks. I think I got the Bucks in five if they play. I wouldn't be surprised to see four. But yeah, me too.
I ain't got to see him play in the NBA one time.
For real?
I just seen a bunch of highlights.
Yeah, I think I've watched him play twice since he's been in the league, and he's impressed me both times. It hasn't been like anything like, yeah, Luke Kennard really tough. It's just, okay, Luke. Like, he's made some plays where I'm like, yeah, I knew he was capable of doing that. But speaking of Giannis, we just talked about the Bucks. Let's talk about Giannis again. We saw the a lot of people were debating him and Embiid because they played not too long ago, and Embiid was talking about how he's the best and all of this stuff. And Giannis was like, yeah, that's cool. He's supposed to feel like that, but I think that's a title that other people are supposed to give you. I don't think you're supposed to call yourself that. Everybody else is supposed to tell you you're the best. So that sparked up the whole debate. Giannis or Embiid, who would you rather start your franchise with at this point in their career? If you could, from right now, if you can grab either one of the players and you like, I'm starting a franchise, those two guys are the only two picks that you can take. Who are you taking?
Well, I definitely think that Giannis is the better player. I definitely think that. But I'm an Embiid fan, dog.
Yeah, I've been an Embiid fan for a while, too.
Embiid fan, dog. I'm going with Joel Embiid. I think that, for one, I don't think that there's very much that Greek Freak is going to do to get any better, really. I think that he's just going to dominate at this level for a while. I don't see him becoming a shooter. That's not something you just learn how to do. If he been in the league, what, 7-8 years?
Mm-hmm.
And he ain't got no better as a shooter by now, he ain't going to be no shooter. Well, I don't think so. No, I guess he could still surprise me, but I don't think he's going to become a shooter. So with that being said, I think that he hit his wall already. I still think Embiid still can go so much further with his game, because if you watch him play, he got great footwork in the post and stuff like that, but his back to the basket ain't all that. He's a face-up guy. I still feel like he can still add to the back-to-the-basket game. He can add a little handle to where he can take some bigs off the dribble from the high post. Like, I think Embiid can really – yeah, I'm rocking with Embiid, man.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. I think if we starting from right now, I think that I think that Giannis is better at this moment, but as far as looking over their career and seeing what I believe to happen in the future, I think Joel is going to have a better career overall. I think we'll look at – Joel's going to go down to me as probably one of the greatest bigs that the Sixers have had. I think
that's saying a lot.
It is. And I think that he's going to be right up there with those guys because of what you said. He's got the total package. Let's just be honest. He could do it all. This is a guy that in a postseason problem, he can step out and hit the three. And for a guy who's not even is not even as graceful when running or walking, his footwork is phenomenal. Like, he almost looks awkward. He's one of those guys that if you saw him running up and down the court, you'd be like, oh, this nigga clumsy. Until he touched the rock, right? Until he touched the rock and hit you with some shit. And you're like, oh. So, yeah, I like his versatility, man. I like it a lot. And like you said, I also don't see Giannis becoming a shooter either. Mostly because of, you pointed this out to me, because I always said, yeah, he could work on that. He could become a shooter. It don't got to be nothing crazy, but it could be respectable. And you was like, bro, have you looked at his hands? And I'm like, nah. And you was like, look at his hands. Look at how he holds the basketball. That's why he's able to dunk and do all of the crazy stuff that he's able to do with that ball, because his hands are so big. Then the more I start
on the ball.
Right. The more I start to pay attention to it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's not something that's easy to work with. I mean, we've seen it in history. A guy like Shaq, that's why Shaq couldn't shoot free throws. It wasn't because he's not a good shooter. It's because of how big his hands were. Shaq, I believe they said, him holding a basketball is equivalent to us holding a grapefruit. Try shooting a grapefruit from the free throw line into the basket. Like, it's hard with hands like that. So
can't even use a guy hand.
Exactly, because you're covering up the rest of the ball. So it's like, I also don't believe him to, you know, turn out to be a good shooter. He might get him a little solid midi to where it's respectable, but nothing outside of there. As far as starting my franchise today, I gotta go with the Greek Freak because of the other elements. Not just that he's a completely dominant guy once he gets the ball. Giannis is a very good defender. His wingspan allows him to rebound extremely well. Excuse me. His wingspan also allows him to become a great stealer. Like, he's phenomenal in the passing lanes because of how long his arms are and whatnot. So I'm taking Giannis as far as starting my franchise. But I think, like I said, I think Embiid will have the better career overall. Let's see. Let's talk Western Conference playoffs for a little bit. They're pretty much set already, but it's a little shaky, to be honest. There's some teams that I expected to be, a little higher in the standings. We talked about this a little bit outside of the podcast, but you actually brought it up. You said, did y'all see how far the Thunder dropped in the rankings? The Thunder are currently sitting at 6, and they're a half a game away from being 8th, I believe it is. So they've got to win out their last two games in order for them to hold on to that 6th spot. But they seem to be limping into the playoffs a little bit. Do you think that they're still as dangerous as they appeared to be earlier on in the season, or do you think that their recent troubles will be more to come? Will that be something that we see trickling into the playoffs?
Well, we know that. Well, if y'all listen, y'all know that this is a team I said a long time ago that I would be worried about as a Warriors fan. But nah, not no more. I'm not worried about them at all. I still think they could challenge the Nuggets, and I still think they could challenge the Rockets. But as far as being afraid of them as a Warriors fan, nah. I think that whatever they had going throughout the season is gone. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it just doesn't seem – they just don't seem to have that that they had. I don't know what it was, but it's just gone. I watched them play the other day.
I'll tell you exactly what it is or what it's been as far as I've seen it. All of that OKC talk that we had and that swagger that they seemed to be carrying, it was being fueled by Paul George. That's when Paul George was in the MVP race. We was talking about how Paul George was challenging James Harden and this, and that. But over time, it seemed like the focus has started to shift again. And who has been the focal point of just about everything within the last month or so? Month and a half.
First, he was about to wrap up the triple-double for the third year. Mm-hmm. Then he was real close to it.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got it.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet. I ain't even pay attention to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete shift, and we know what that does to OKC as a team. It's and not
– he got his taste of, like, I'm the shit.
Exactly. And we know as much as Russell West. As much as Russell Westbrook says, I don't pay any attention to the statistics or chasing stats and all of that, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. For one, he loves the limelight. He can say all that he wants to that he doesn't. He loves the limelight. Simple as that. And that's exactly what he's starting to get. He's starting to get more of that, starting with the triple-double thing and then going along with the Nipsey thing with him having a 20-20-21 game. So it's a lot that's going on that I feel like is giving him that attention that he wants and that he desires. And Paul George is that player that's like, I'm cool with being right here. Like, I'm cool with it. Like, he's not a guy that's like, nah, fuck that. Like, we need to go back to what we were doing to keep us successful. And it's just like I said, it's been a shift. So I'm not necessarily blaming Russell Westbrook, but it comes a time where you have to see, like, okay, we're more successful when I take a little step back. But I mean, obviously, that's not in his DNA, and that also goes into coaching too, as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, but I think that he looking too much into the win and losses of it, and not to how it makes them better as a team. Like, just because you winning games don't mean that it's always the best thing for the team in the long run. Like, you got to be setting these role players up to be ready for these playoff moments when you can't get 25 assists.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to be able to work without you having to set them up every time, because in the playoffs, you're not going to be able to set them up every time. It's just not going to happen. That's, teams really play defense in the playoffs. And I feel like Russ, he's still got a lot to learn. He took a nice step this year, I feel like, for a little while at least, as far as being a better point guard. But he still got a little bit to learn.
Yeah, I would like to see him become that player more consistently, especially when that's what makes you successful. It's clear that Paul George can be the guy that you need him to be. He can be we're not going to say he can be Kevin Durant, but he can be Kevin Durant-ish as far as leading the pack and being that scorer that you need him to be. But he doesn't have the mentality to where he's going to be that guy all the time. He's going to be that guy as often as you allow him to be that guy. And that's, like I said, a step that I would like to see Russ take as far as being that type of guy more consistently. And like you said, playoff time is going to be different. People going to play, they're going to play defense. But I think that's what Russ wants, because Russ is going to be able to chuck up all of them shots. It's going to be maybe game one and game two where he tries to get those guys involved and they're not comfortable because this is not what we do throughout the year. They're going to be in some unfamiliar situations to where they're not producing, and Russ going to go out there and chuck it up like he wants to do. And right now it's looking like if everything pans out and stays the way that it is, if they win out and stay in that sixth seed, they'll be seeing the Rockets in the first round. So
I think that Russ will be at his best and his team will be at their best when he becomes an efficient 24-10-10 guy or 24-9-9 guy to where he's shooting over 50% from the field, maybe like 37-38% from three, where he ain't taking no whole bunch of shots a night, but he's still torching you. Like, if could you imagine having to guard Russ in a good offensive setting to where you always off balance and chasing him when he doesn't have the ball, the next thing you know, he just come off a dribble handoff and going straight to the cup. Like, I think that Russ should be way more efficient, but he shoots too much. He shoots too many jumpers, and that's because he's looking to score too often. I don't think that he has to shoot that much to score 24. He just got to – or 30, even to get 30 or 40, Russ don't got to shoot a lot, man. He just got to wait for his time to get his buckets. All he got to do is find a guy off balance just a little bit. He could just blow right by him and get a layup. But instead, he just want to have his pedal to the metal and shoot jumpers and shit all day when that's really not what he'd have to do if he just was patient.
I agree 100%. Me personally, I don't give a damn how many points Russell Westbrook scores because he's going to score, period, just because of his skill set. As a coach, I'm challenging Russ. I don't give a damn how many points you go out here and score. I want you to string together, if you an MVP, string together 10 straight games where I'm seeing you shoot 50% or better from the field. I don't care how many points you score. Let's go out here and get some dubs and let me see you shoot efficiently. I don't care how many points you get. I need to see that.
He's too athletic and too good of a scorer to be that inefficient. I think he tries to be a volume scorer, and that's not his game. That's James Harden's game.
Exactly.
You cannot be a volume scorer shooting two-pointers. That's something like you can't do that.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's just I think Russ believes in himself too much to where he makes the game more difficult than it has to be. Like you said, a lot of times all it takes is for him to get one step on a defender and he's blowing by him because of his explosiveness. And even in instances where he's not blowing by the defender, it's not hard to get him in a pick and roll set and let him get busy on the big man. But a lot of those instances when they do get him in a pick and roll sets, he tries to do too much and make the spectacular play, meaning he's either trying to cross you and pull up in your face and make the difficult shot as opposed to blowing by you, getting to the cup and drawing the foul or finishing over top of you because of his explosiveness. I would love to see this, and this is why I say that Russ at his best is not better than Derrick Rose at his best, because Derrick Rose understood, I don't give a damn how you guarding me. If I want to get to the rack, that's where I'm going. You're either going to have to foul me or you're getting dunked on, or I'm going to finish around you because I'm that crafty at the basket. Russ does not have that in his DNA. He's that guy that's, oh, I can get around you, but I'm going to settle and hit the jumper in your face and make it look nasty. But he's not built like that. Like, he's got a lot of Kobe in him to where he wants to make the difficult shots. But if you give Kobe Russell Westbrook's quickness and explosiveness, Kobe not shooting half the shots that he was shooting back then. Kobe's going to blow by you and punch on you like he was doing back early with the number 8 on with the Froby. That's what Kobe Bryant would do with Russell Westbrook's size and ability. I just don't understand why Russell Westbrook makes it as hard as it is on himself.
Bro, he's shooting 42% from the field this year and 28% from three. That's not acceptable.
That's horrible. 28% from three?
28.6%.
And he shoots a hell of a lot of them, too. That's the bad part.
5.6 per game.
That's ridiculous. That is horrible. You're not going to be successful like that. And I admire Russell Westbrook because of his mentality.
Me too.
I just
People
wish,
think I hate Russ.
Nah, you've been saying for the longest you don't hate Russ. You hate Russ's inefficiency and the way that Russ turns the ball over.
Yeah, and this is a perfect segue to our next topic.
Fact. Right? Exactly. It sure is. That's a perfect segue. I was just about to get right into it. NBA players, they got to vote on the most overrated and most underrated players in the league. Now, as far as underrated players are concerned, the number one overrated player in the NBA as far as players are concerned was Drew Holiday. I can agree with that. Tied for number two was Dame Dollar and Chris Middleton. I can agree with that as well. I believe all three of those guys are underrated. I would even make a push to say that Dame Lillard might be the most underrated player in the league. Drew Holiday, I feel like, definitely is because year in, year out, he's producing. If he's healthy, Drew Holiday's having a pretty solid season. Overrated players. Now, this was a tie. Both of these guys tied for number one. Draymond Green and Russell Westbrook. Now, I saw a whole bunch of people online. Russ overrated. They tripping. This, and that. I can't believe they would even post this article. Well, like I just said, the NBA players voted on this. This isn't no sports writers. This isn't coaches. This isn't front offices. These are the guys that line up and play against these guys night in and night out. If anybody's qualified to vote on this shit and it be accurate, it's the guys that are actually playing. Like, I don't understand why people are saying, like, nah, they tripping. Like, who's tripping? Because it's the players. Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. How do you feel about this list?
Exactly how you feel. I mean, who are we to challenge it? Like, this one isn't up for no scrutiny, man. These are the guys that work with these guys. They're giving the evaluation this time. We don't work there. We just watch. We can't criticize this one. This was on them. They picked Draymond. They picked Russ. And I personally feel like it has to be for the reasons that we just listed. I mean, he's inefficient as hell. If I would much rather guard the guy that's going to get 30 off of 30 shots as opposed to getting 30 off 12 of them bitches.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to guard the guy that's going to light me up fast and quick. I didn't took one possession off or two possessions off, and he didn't score 6 points.
Chris Middleton.
He going on 8-0 runs by himself, like just out of nowhere. Three possessions go, we go up and down three times. He got eight. Like, damn, that's not Russ. That ain't ever happening with Russ. He ain't scoring eight in a row. He takes too many dumb shots. And I feel like when you playing basketball, you would rather guard the guy who's going to take a lot of shots, the tough shots. I mean, it is what it is, dog.
And it's crazy that you broke it down like that, because if you look at the list, that's almost probably exactly what the players were getting at. Because you look at a guy like Dame Lillard or Chris Middleton or even Drew Holiday, you take some possessions off and these niggas is filling it up right now. Like, it ain't no shit. Dame probably gonna go out here and go crazy, but he ain't gonna shoot the ball that well. And on the flip side, that's exactly what Russell Westbrook does. It's like, the underrated guys and the overrated guys, excluding Draymond because he's got a completely different skill set, they're night and day.
Because what it is, bro, it's the little things that when you don't play basketball at a high level against high competition, then you won't understand, like, the real nuances of basketball, like coming off the screens and shit like that. Like, when you an athlete like Russell Westbrook, you don't ever have to do anything but run off the screen. You don't have to read the defender or nothing. You just go get the ball and then you just go bound.
Mm-hmm.
But when you guys like Dame Lillard or Chris Middleton or even like guys like Steph Curry and these guys who don't have the luxury of just being able to just flat out just run right past people and jump right over people, actually have skills that you need in basketball. Like, reading screens and reading defenders as far as how they're playing you and how they're reacting to the screen. Just little shit. Like, these are things that when you're a good scorer and you're not athletic like a Russell Westbrook, that you know for a fact these guys is like, if you go over the screen, they're going to fade to the corner. Or if you on my hip, I'm just going to curl cut.
Right.
Like, just little shit like that. You don't ever see Russ doing this type of stuff because he really don't. He just don't have to. You don't have to do it. But it's stuff that these guys, they do. And it makes them hard to guard. You don't want to guard a guy who knows how to read screens as well as a Steph Curry. That shit hard as hell.
Right.
Like, you think, like, look at Ray Allen. Like, people hate guarding Ray Allen, bro, because he know how to read it. He knew how to read a screen. He gonna be wide open every time he come off that bitch.
Fact.
It's hard to guard.
Fact. That hit the nail on the head. It's like, I don't know, man. It's how could you really argue with the fact that players that are playing against these guys decided they're overrated and underrated?
Because these Russell Westbrook fans got it in their mind that everybody in the NBA is hating on Russ and what he's doing for some reason.
Because they don't want to look at the situation logically enough to understand why people are saying what they're saying about Russ. They're completely blind to the fact that Russ shoots god-awful from the field. They're completely blind to the fact that Russ turns the ball over like it's nothing. They're completely blind to the fact that just because Russ is having a triple-double does not mean Russ had a good game tonight. People get too caught up in those statistics. And I really wonder when triple doubles became that monumental. Like, yeah, it's cool to say, yeah, I went out and got a triple double tonight. But if you got a triple double and your turnovers is the same as your assist or some shit like that, it doesn't matter. Like that, I've never been one to be like, shit, he just had a triple-double last night. Like, yeah, I feel like that's an accomplishment in itself, but it doesn't mean much when it's not affecting the game as far as wins. It's not affecting wins. And I don't know, man. Like I said, or like we both said, it's senseless for anybody to argue. These are the guys that play against him every week, every night. I mean, if they're not qualified to say who's overrated and underrated, then who really is?
Yeah, who will we believe?
Right, like, this simple as that. Like, if you think that the players are tripping for calling these guys, then whose opinion is really going to hold weight? If the players would have came out and said Russ was underrated, they would have been like, shit, hell yeah, he underrated, knowing good and damn well Russell Westbrook is not underrated by no means. But like you said, it's the fans, man. They're letting their, I guess, the way that they feel about these players, they're letting that get in the way of actual reality and facts.
Yeah, I'm not anti Russell Westbrook. I love the passion that he brings to the game. I think he approaches the game, like a lot of these guys should approach the game. But it's just, I mean, I can't sit here and act like he should be shooting as much as he does. And I think that's literally the only reason for the inefficiencies is that he just shoots the ball at the wrong times.
That's a fact.
Because I'm just sitting here looking at his player card, bro. He's never in his career shot higher than 45%.
That is crazy. That is crazy. I mean,
his career high from three is 34%, and you would think that he was a 40%.
The way that he be letting them bitches fly. Yeah, because he's got the ultimate green light when he sees it. So I don't know, man. It's hard to look at a player like Russell Westbrook and think that they'll ever change. But it's so crazy to think how much better or how much more dominant a player like Russell Westbrook would be if he did change. But the fact that he won't do it, or that he's most likely not going to do it, is just like, goodness gracious. Like, bro, do you know what you could be if you did this? Like, all of them fucking videos that he be posting in the off season of him at that gym with Melo and all them niggas running pickup games. If he took that time to decide, okay, now I wanna figure out how to read screens. I wanna figure out how to be more effective without the ball in my hands. I wanna do this and do that. Russell Westbrook would be he would be indescribable.
A nightmare, bro. It'd be a nightmare.
Yeah.
But when you athletic as hell and then you average a triple-double for 3 years in a row, who you really about to listen to trying to tell you something about what you do, though? You know what I'm saying? He looking at it like, shit, what you mean? You talking about?
Yeah.
I understand where he coming from. Like, who are we? We ain't in the league. But I'm just saying, from looking at it from the outside, looking in, and when I play with Russell Westbrook on the 2K, and I'm using him how he should be used, he's a problem.
Facts.
He do nothing with him. He just, I don't know, man. I just feel like if he picked his spots better and took way less jumpers, and like you said, took the time to learn the art of actually reading the screen instead of just blowing by people and shit like that all the time, even though you can do it, you would be a much harder matchup. Yeah, play with your mind a little bit too in basketball.
That's a fact, man. Let's think about it like this, man. Everybody gives KD all of this flack because he couldn't win with Russ and he decided to leave Russ. This is, before we get out of here, one thing I want to put in these people's heads to help them understand the situation a little more. If you have a guy like Russell Westbrook, who was too stubborn to go out and work on his own game to make him that much better, how could you not see why Kevin Durant left a guy that doesn't even know how to take a back seat? If he doesn't have the mental to be like, I could take another step and be this much better if I decide to do this. If he doesn't have that mindset, he damn sure was never going to have the mindset to be like, you know what? If I take a step back and let KD really do what he does, we could win rings, like multiple of them things. A player that will not change his own or make himself better in his own game is damn sure not going to do what it takes to make the team better. Simple as that. That's about as night and day, or it's about as plain as I can put it. But, yeah, man, that pretty much wraps up the episode. Was there anything you wanted to say to the people before we got out of here?
Nah, that's it. We got it all.
Yeah, I think that's about it. Make sure y'all keep letting us know what y'all want to hear about. Keep sharing. We appreciate all the love. The NFL draft is coming up soon, so we'll be touching on that as well. Also some spring games going on this weekend, so we can touch on that too next episode. But anything else that y'all want to hear, let us know. Hit us up on the Pick and Roll Podcast Instagram, Pick and Roll Podcast Facebook, and Pick and Roll Podcast Twitter. We know we're not as active on Twitter as we are on the other sites, but just continue to hit us up. Whatever y'all let us know, we will make sure that we execute. Did you get a chance to see who won our bracket?
No, I didn't check. Who was it?
I'm not sure who it was either. I need to go back on and look. I'm gonna see if I can
check real quick because we got to announce it.
Pick and Roll Podcast. Who won? GK.
GK won.
Yeah.
Okay.
GK won our Pick and Roll Podcast. So GK, if you out there listening, we'll hit you up after this episode. But yeah, you did win our Pick and Roll Podcast, our first annual Pick and Roll Podcast March Madness tournament bracket. So you have won a spot on the show. Go ahead and get your topics together. Let us know what you want to talk about, and we'll go ahead and get that squared away. But signing out, it's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam. We appreciate y'all.
We out.